everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I am Belinda Granger and I have a very special guest today. And the reason I say he's special is because he is the very first athlete that I will be interviewing that I have actually never met. So I actually had to do a whole heap of research for this one. Felt like I was back in school. So welcome, Matt Hansen from the USA.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our chat.
Now, the reason that we, obviously I did want to talk to you anyway, but the reason that we came up with your name was because we did put a little bit of a call out through our social media channels on Instagram, asking who my audience would next like me to call. And of course, your name came up so many times. So you have a big fan base out there, Matt, which was great, but I'm glad that you agreed to take the call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it caught the post caught at a good time because I had a couple people from, the team of athletes that I coach, all seemed to jump on that right away.
It was awesome. And we will talk about your race team a little later on in the podcast, because that's quite exciting too. But now, Matt, just for our audience, you are based in Iowa, but that's not where you're from originally though, is it? Where were you actually born in the US?
Yeah, I was born in a small town called West Concord, Minnesota. I actually lived about 5 miles outside of a town of roughly, I think, about 600 people right now. So
wow.
Yeah, definitely small town life is what I've been around my entire existence. I'm in Storm Lake, Iowa right now, which is the big city compared to West Concord, but I think it's right around 12,000 people total.
Tiny. I mean, I'm from a reasonably small town here myself in Noosa on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, but I think we've got a few more people than that. So ours are slightly bigger, but that is a small town. So I'm really glad to talk to someone who's from a small town, because most of my, the athletes I've been talking to are from larger cities or towns. How's Corona been for you? I know it's that subject that we keep talking about, but obviously it has had such an enormous effect on everyone around the world, but in particular professional athletes, because basically your bread and butter's been taken away from you right now. So what's it been like for you personally, living in a small town with this virus? Has it been a big issue where you live? Have you had to stay indoors?
We actually didn't. We didn't have really many issues until about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
We started to ramp up just slowly, but even in our county, I believe we're just over 200 cases and over 100 of them have recovered at this point. So, it's been a little bit different in that regard. Obviously the effects are, the pool situation has been non-existent. I had my first pool swim yesterday.
I saw that.
Yeah. I had to travel quite a ways to find that one, but I was able to do so. I live about a block and a half away from the lake here, and so I finally have been able to get into that on a regular basis as well. I started with booties and gloves when it was in the low 50s, but I got out of the water today, and it was about 65 degrees today. So I'll take
much
that.
Much better. Much
no
better.
No problem. Yes. Yes. My wife's been going into work at the university. The university did shut down, obviously, but she's considered essential staff there. And so she's been going in every day as normal, but she just goes there and then is hosting her Zoom meetings and everything from there for the most part. But yeah, it's been definitely an interesting time. But yeah, thankfully, I live on the very outskirts of town, and I don't have much of a social life here in Storm Lake anyway. So aside from the pool, my, you know, things haven't changed too terribly much for me. I'm able to get out of the door on my bike or running and be out of town pretty much immediately. That's so perfect. That's helped things out a little bit.
Yeah. So that's a huge difference. And so really it's only been the swimming, which seems to be for majority of athletes around the world. I know particularly the athletes based here in Australia, that's been really, we didn't really go into full lockdown. We've always been allowed to train. So that's just been the biggest issue is the swimming. And you didn't go into do it. Did you do any dry land swimming or did you think about, are there any like backyard pools that you're able? We've been seeing all these, you know, people tethering themselves and swimming on the spot or doing dry land swim skills. It's been fairly desperate measures for so many athletes.
Yeah, it was definitely desperate times here. I did three or four days a week of stretch cords on top of my normal kind of strength and mobility stuff, and I called that good. I don't really have any access to backyard pools or anything like that, and so as soon as the lake started to get to the point where I could get in without hyperventilating, I started to get in there for 15 to 20 minutes at a time. You know, the nice thing about the lake is it's really shallow. So if I ever get into a point where it's too cold or too cold, I start to cramp up or something, I can just stand up.
Oh, I don't know how you do it. Oh, I tell you one thing, living here where I do in Queensland, we're going into winter now, but it's technically not winter. You'd laugh at it if you knew. I think we don't even get down to single digits half the time. So our water's still pretty warm, but I'm already in a wetsuit because I'm soft. We all get really soft. So I don't even think I could put my feet in that sort of cold water. So you guys are doing better than us, that's for sure. Now, Matt, let's just talk a little bit about your past. Obviously, this is where my research came in. I had to find out, you know, when you started, what background you came from. And it's quite an interesting bit of information. So you decided to go full-time pro, so give up your job in 2014, is that correct?
I was teaching until the end of until May of 2015.
15. Okay. Yep. But Ray, when did you actually start or line up for your first professional race?
So my first professional race would have been, I did Ironman Arizona in 2013 as kind of a revenge race after a frustrating, a couple flat tires at Kona. That was kind of I didn't really plan on going pro, at least at that point, but that taking my pro card was the only way I could race on that fitness. And so, I did Ironman Arizona in 2013.
Okay. And how did you finally know that it was time? Because like you said, you were working full time. Obviously, your background, you were working at university as a professor. Yep. How did you know within yourself that it was time to give that all away, something that you'd obviously studied for and you had a great secure job and as a university professor, to going full-time pro? Because it's always fascinating to hear. I mean, some pros, they've gone straight from being junior professional athletes straight into senior professional athletes. But it's always interesting to hear the stories behind the motivation from being a full-time working athlete, as in a real job, to going full-time pro athlete.
Yeah, that was definitely a tough decision, obviously. I was on the 10-year track had basically, in 2015, had basically been granted 10-year. I just had to put in, you know, 6 months more time and I would have been a full 10-year professor. Wow. You know, I really wasn't considering stepping away from the university much until the end of 2014. I ended up winning Ironman Chattanooga in 2014, which, you know, I guess was still considered my rookie season. I just kind of progressed really quickly. And I think I did 5 Ironmans that year, which I kind of laugh at now, being young and stupid, you know.
Stupid.
But, you know, I think I wasn't swimming that great. I was kind of hanging on to the second pack then. And, you know, my bike was nowhere what it is now. But I think the slowest run that I had on that group of, you know, of five races was like a 2:47, and ran a 2:41 and a 2:42. So I didn't really know that that was that great, but my coach, you know, was pretty impressed by that, I guess.
A little bit, yeah.
So he was the one, or I guess I had a swim coach and then a bike and a run coach, and they really started saying, you know, at some point you've got to, think about going all in. And after my first win, the seed was at least allowed to start being planted at that point. And, after I came back in 2015 and went down to Ironman Texas and won the North American Championships there for the first time. And that was I won the race there. The tradition after winning is to come back and give the final, the final awards to the last hour of people.
Yep. And then last
you don't really sleep at all that night. And then, give the speech the next morning. And then I got in the car immediately and had a 17 and a half hour drive back home. Ooh. And I just came straight to the university, showered and changed here and taught 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 o'clock classes.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so that was kind of the final, like, I'm burning the candle on both ends. Had a lot of long conversation with my wife on the drive home. And, we decided that, we could try to make it work. And, from me, for a personal standpoint, I would much rather look back and know than look back and wonder. And that's
absolutely
why I made the leap.
Absolutely. And you really haven't looked back, have you? I mean, your results have been terrific.
Yeah, I mean, the first year, I had won two full Ironmans in a row, essentially. And then, think that the trajectory is just going to go straight forward from there. Well, didn't.
In a perfect world. But yeah, welcome to the life of a pro athlete.
Yeah. I mean, I crashed in Kona that year on the bike in 2015, and then had a tough race in Texas in 2016 at Ironman Texas when I came back there. Was basically in third place with 2 miles to go and tried to push for second and ended up passing out. And and then I tried to go to Cairns and I crashed there as well. And so it wasn't really the from a result standpoint, it wasn't really Yeah, and so really I wasn't having much fun at that point, and I probably wasn't that much fun to be around, but my wife and I just had a lot of talks and kind of that helped me realize that I needed, I struggled to shift the minds, or I allowed my mindset to be shifted. I went from competing because I absolutely loved it and I loved figuring out what I could actually do. And that was the motivation behind competing, to then, when it became my job, the competition became focused around outcome. And that just put too much stress on the result. And I had never been a result oriented person. I was always a process oriented in the past. And so I was able to shift back, much with the help of Julie. I started working with Coach Dibbs at that point. And
I was going to ask when you started working.
Get that part of my routine back in the right direction. And that's when I started having a lot more fun and finding a lot more success.
Yeah, it's fascinating that you say that, and what you're saying just makes so much sense, and it's something you don't think about, particularly when you have such a great first year. You just, of course, you're just going to assume that, wow, I made the right decision, this is the way it's going to go, and I'm just going to keep getting better from here. Of course you are, because you're now, instead of only spending half your time training and being a pro athlete and your other half of the time working, you've got full time to be spending it all on focusing on racing. But you're dead right, when it becomes outcome based and you think, well, if I just push a bit more and get second, that's X amount more dollars in the bank. I mean, don't we all think like that? We've all thought like that in the past, and you're dead right. It doesn't always result in better results in the outcome, in the long run. So with Julie Dibbins, because I wanted to talk about Jules, obviously I know Julie really well. She's got an amazing stable of athletes right now, and she
and I
follow Dibs. I've got quite a few friends that are training with her. You know, Tim O'Donnell and Marinda Carfrae are good friends of mine, and I know they absolutely love that training group. And Julie just seems to have done such a great job. She was a phenomenal athlete herself, obviously. But you've been with Julie now for quite some time, and you really do you really feel that she's made a huge difference?
Yeah, definitely. You know, she's been great, and you know, it's one thing that I always, you know, have believed that if you're doubting the training or doubting the process, it's time to, you know, start looking for a different process. And that's, you know, just something I've never had to do. And, you know, with my educational background, being in sports science and, you know, with a former, teaching it in the past and doing a bunch of coaching now, it's, to me, I don't want to be doing that with my training. Like, I honestly, most of the time I wake up and say, okay, what do I have to do today? Or I'll look at what my schedule is the night before. I'm not looking, you know, at the, like the whole macro level. I let Julie and Matt take care of that.
Yeah.
You know, and that allows me to just focus on my job as an athlete, which is executing and giving good feedback. And I feel like when I'm doing my job and executing workouts and then, you know, talking with them about how everything is going, I've worked with Julie for, almost 4 years now, and Matt for 2.5, and, Matt Botchel, sorry. And, when I'm doing my job, it makes their job a lot easier. And you know, we just, it helps the coaches trust me and me trust the coaching and their process. And again, that's, I think, just a huge, factor in results is being able to trust the process and show up day in and day out and know that you're doing the right things.
I totally agree. And with Julie and Matt, how do they actually work together? So obviously Julie is a triathlon coach, so she coaches your cross swim bike run. And where does Matt actually fit into the picture as well?
Yeah, so Matt is a cycling specialist. He's done a lot of time trials in the past, and so that's really where we rely on him. He's really helped me on position and aerodynamics. And, you know, for the most part now, he's got control of the bike training. So Julie just kind of says, you know, this is the rough amount of TSS that I want on the bike this week. And then Matt goes to work on that. And I'll be honest, it's not a relationship that many other type A, you know, triathletes are all type A, right? That many other type A coaches are going to allow, right? Like they want total control. And, you know, I was hesitant to go back to a two coach, system. But it's been great. The way they work together is phenomenal and just really, really unique. And you know, it's worked with me, but it's also worked with a number of other athletes who have done that with Julie and Matt as well. And so, definitely it's not the most popular way to do it, but it definitely works for me.
Yeah. Look, and I think it just, you know, shows what an amazing person Julie is and Matt, because like you said, two A-type personalities, three A-type personalities right there just in that picture with Julie, Matt and yourself, and just the fact that it works so well, and it obviously is working. I think it's amazing. It's great. But Julie's based in Boulder. Where's Matt based?
Yes. Matt is in the UK.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yep. So you've got one coach in Boulder, one in the UK. How far is it? Sorry, please excuse my ignorance here. How far is it from Iowa to Boulder?
I can get there in about 9.5 hours if I'm driving.
Okay.
If I'm flying, it'll probably take longer because I have to take 6 connections to get there.
Oh, God, that's insane.
Not quite 6, but there's no easy way to get there.
No direct
flight. It's much faster to drive, yeah.
Right. And do you do that often? I mean, obviously, when I look through Instagram, I know that you do spend some time there in training camps, but I'm assuming it's not that often. So majority of your training would be done in Iowa, following the program, training solo, or
Yeah, a majority of it for sure. You know, our winters here are pretty rough. And so I tend to try to go for a couple weeks just to get out of the pain cave. I'll go to, I've gone to Claremont, Florida the last couple years.
And okay.
You know, I host like a couple 4-day camps and, you know, maybe two of those. And then I stay there for 3 weeks and get some training just outdoors, just to break up the winter a little bit. And then we always do with Julie, we always do a 2-week kind of early March camp to kick off the season. So this year we did it just outside of Las Vegas.
Oh, right. Yes.
So I get to train with a few people, you know, with her crew there. And then, yeah, I'll try to get out to Boulder once or twice a summer. And then we typically get together again for a pre-Kona camp. We've gone to Lawrence, Kansas for the last 3 years for the, you know, 2-week Kona camp.
And you get a lot out of these camps. I did see some photos from the last camp in Las Vegas, and it did look pretty great. I know that Laura Siddle was there for the first time because she's just joined Julie. She's the athlete I had to email and get a little bit of inside goss on you.
Oh, okay.
She was no good to me. She was no good. All she said was super nice guy. He's a great guy and he loves dogs. So
I paid her well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sid is great. That was the first time I got to meet her and interact with her. And I was looking forward to racing in Australia with her
She
in
told
May.
Me. I didn't realize that you were down to do Port Macquarie. So,
I was, Yeah, so I was definitely bummed. But, you know, who knows what will happen here this fall. But
True.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I get out of the camps, you know, obviously it's great to be around people and other triathletes. I just don't have that environment here to have people to train with. I mean, my wife does some Ironmans as well, but
right.
It's just, you know, to have people to ride with on your, you know, 6-hour rides is great. But I really need people to swim with. You know, when I'm here, I'm swimming completely alone. And so that's the biggest thing that I benefit from, I think, with the camp situations is, you know, just having Julie get to see, you know, see my stroke for a couple weeks. And it seems like we always make a couple of big step forwards when I can do that and make that work.
Julie was a fairly phenomenal swimmer herself, so that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, she does a good job of keeping us humble. Mm. You know, I was proud of myself in our last camp in Vegas for what I swam in an open 100, and she's like, oh yeah, I used to do that backstroke.
Thanks, that makes me feel really good.
Yeah.
Oh, she's hilarious. I love
it. She keeps us humble.
Good, as she should. She's always been good at that. So good on, good on her. Gotta keep it real. Oh,
yes.
That's funny. Now, you're a renowned, obviously, bike run specialist. So, and obviously from what you've just said too, I'm assuming you don't have a swim background as a younger
Definitely
child,
not.
As a child.
Definitely
But I found this interesting in some of my research, that you actually, your sport when you were young growing up was wrestling.
Yeah.
Is
that
right?
I wrestled all the way up until, you know, my first year at college.
Wow. Yeah,
I dislocated my hip wrestling, and that was the end of my career.
No way. So how old were you? How old were you when you started wrestling?
5.
Oh, right. So it really has been that's still the sport you've been doing the longest.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
My dad got me, you know, he wrestled in college. He got me started, you know, he was my coach all the way up until, you know, 7th grade when we started the high school sports. And so, yeah, it was always kind of a thing that my dad and I always had in common and, you know, a way for us to connect.
Oh, that's incredible. And so obviously injury forced you out of that sport for good.
Yes.
Yep. And what did you do once you recovered from that? What was were there any thoughts of getting into another sport? Obviously, I know you have a passion for running. You're a phenomenal runner. I always hated people like you, natural runners. And I just wanted to kill them. and, you know, obviously it's a passion, but did you then go into thinking about becoming just a runner of sorts or at least running marathons, running half marathons?
Yeah, it took me about a year to recover and be able to move my body again well after that that injury. But I did actually, I went to a small college, and I had a decent agreement with the track coach. He said, if you show up to run the conference meet every year, I don't care what you do the rest of the time. And I was with my major, I had a lot of hour requirements I had to spend in the lab and things like that. And
right.
That was obviously happening during normal practice. And so I would just kind of run on my own and then show up. I think I did 4 cross country meets and 4 track meets and in my time in university. And so I did run a little bit, but I didn't really start really running consistently until I was working on my master's, and I was just kind of alone up in another small school in Minnesota and didn't know anybody. Right. And so that's when I started training a little bit. I bought a $500 bike off of eBay, I think. And
No way. Okay. This is when it started. This is when the real deal started. Okay.
Yeah. And, so when I was 16, I made a list of 50 goals for the next 10 years. And for some reason, I have no idea why, I put to do an Ironman on that list. And,
seriously? At 16?
Yep. I'd never seen one. I didn't know anybody who did one. I think I probably saw it on the, a Kona special on TV or something when I was a kid. And, it was literally number 49 on the list. I was running out of things to put on there. And so I just,
chuck this one in.
At straw. Yeah. Cause the assignment was to do 50. It was an assignment from a wrestling coach, mentor of mine. And it was to get to 50. And I was like, I think 49 was doing Ironman and number 50 was on a monkey.
Oh, I love it. Okay. It's as crazy as, but a similar story. Not that it's Chris McCormack was the same. I mean, he was from a running background, never even heard of triathlon before, but used to watch the Ironman in Kona on TV and was just blown away by these guys and what they were doing. And he always said, one day I will end up doing one. And it was years later before he actually even got into triathlon. But yeah, it's interesting that he had no idea, but he just knew it looked cool. So to hear that you've got a similar story that you just decided out of to play, this sounds like something good to do. And now to see, it's incredible to see how far you've come. How many Ironman distance titles have you got now?
5.
5. Not bad.
Yep. Yeah.
For number 4, well, for number 49.
yeah. Hopefully I'll have a few more. But yeah, I mean, the whole story is kind of just surreal because the first one that I did, I completely planned on being one and done, just doing one and just
ticking that off the
bucket list kind of thing. Yeah. And, I did Ironman Coeur d'Alene for my first one, and Crowley won that one. And I ran into him in recovery. I had no idea who he was. I didn't know anything about the sport. And, he's like, how did the race go for you? And I said, oh, it was pretty good, I think. This was my time. He's like, well, what'd you run? And I said, I think I ran a 3 flat. And he's like, oh, and this is your first one? And like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I really think that you could do something in this sport. And, I had no idea what that meant. But I found out the next morning that I qualified for Kona. I had no idea. I knew nothing about the sport. And it just, that day just kind of, essentially changed the course of my future without me even knowing.
That's classic. Well, let me know. Crowley's got a pretty damn good eye too, because I was at a race in the Philippines, a 70.3 race, quite a few years ago now. And that was when Patrick Lang turned up. No one knew who he was. He was just a young kid from Germany, and he absolutely blew these guys away on the bike. And I remember watching it and thinking, who is this? And after the, I think Crowley did eventually end up running him down and won. And I remember Crowley turning to Patrick and saying, you have got a huge future in this sport. And he wasn't wrong there. So he obviously wasn't wrong with you either. So, Crowley's, he's got an eye for the sport, that's for sure.
For sure.
It's incredible. So, okay, so we know that you're a natural runner. And I hate to use that term because I know you also work extremely hard on the run. I mean, we used to say it about Jan Frodeno, he's just a natural, but then I've seen him at work. And so it's a combination of natural ability plus bloody hard work that makes you one of the, if not the best, Ironman marathoner in the world. But what about the bike riding? Because obviously, you know, you started on a $500 bike, you don't have a background in biking, yet your bike riding is just as strong as your running. You're a phenomenal bike rider, but is this something that you've really had to work exceptionally hard on, or you think you've got a fair bit of natural talent when it comes to biking as well?
I mean, yeah, I've had to work
really hard
on the bike, especially, you know, bike and the swim. I've spent a lot of time and in the last 2 years, my bike has really come along really since we brought Matt on board.
Yep.
You know, it was always moving in the right direction, but, you know, we brought Matt on board and then Julie really backed my running miles off you know, and kind of, we were, the way that, I was doing things before, I was kind of chasing, you know, seconds and giving up minutes, is the way I like to put it. Like I was really going after, you know, trying to, you know, run the lights out every race, but, you know, and training that way. And it was costing me time on the bike for sure. And definitely time in the water. Cause when you're tired, when you have tired run legs, you can't swim.
Can't swim. No.
You know, so, terrible. And my swims were showing it. And so we backed off the run significantly for, you know, especially in the winter and really, you know, spent a lot of time, just working on one position cause I had a lot of work that I could do there. But you know, the way that the training's been structured, it's definitely I've definitely seen a good improvement in both the swim and the bike.
Yeah, absolutely. And with swimming, you didn't. I mean, from Australia, 99.9% of the kids in Australia, we've all swum squad. So even though I wouldn't say when I was racing back in the day, I would never have called myself a swim specialist, but I still swam as a child. And most children here in Australia will do some form of swim. And when I say swim training, actual squad growing up, but obviously that was not the case with yourself. When was the first time that you were introduced to a proper swim squad?
Proper swim squad would have been, 2011, 2012.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started working remotely with a coach out of Texas, Tim Floyd. And so I guess when I would go down there for a couple days at a time, then I would, you know, have three or four. I mean, the first time I swam with his group, it was a wreck. I had no idea how to circle swim or anything like that. Imagine. And so, I mean, Tumbleton. I was the one in the lane that everybody was just grumbling about the entire time. And
always getting in the way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still like that, I'm sure, because like the pool that I swim in doesn't even have the lane ropes. Yeah, I get with everybody else and it takes me a couple sessions to, you know, remember the proper swim etiquette.
It's hilarious. I love it. Well, you've definitely come, if you think about it from that perspective, you've definitely come a long, long way. Because even if we look at athletes like Cameron Wirth, who obviously came in as a biker, has had to work on his run and his swim. Cam was still a swimmer as a kid here. So it's not like he was learning something new. He swam when he was young in proper squads. So, you know, and I look at him now and everyone's saying, oh, he's improved, he swims so much. But he was from a swimming, I wouldn't say swimming background, but he swam obviously all the way up through his teenage years. But for someone like yourself, I always have so much respect for, because to take up, which is arguably one of the most technical sports in swimming, it's so much of it involves technique. So to see how far you've come, that's pretty impressive. From 2011, being in a proper squad, like you said, it's a big difference. You know, I can swim a session on my own, but the feedback you get when you're actually in a squad with other swimmers around you and with a coach standing in pool deck, it's an enormous difference.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely been a big learning curve on the swim for sure. And you know, I hope that that this whole 2 month absence out of the water isn't going to punish me too terribly bad, but I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, I just think it's I always say I always had this thing. However long you have out of the water, it's going to take at least that long and plus an extra week to get back in. So, you know, I think 2 months is a long time out of the water for anyone, even for a swimmer. But the only saving grace, I suppose, to speak here is it's all athletes are in the same boat. So if you all come back in being that little bit behind, then we've still got a fair playing field, if you look at it that perspective.
when racing like gets that. Back, the bike run is going to be faster than ever, I think.
Exactly. I agree. And talking about the bike run, I know that you've taken part in a couple, I think one of the Ironman virtual racing, VR4, and I know you've done a couple of the Zwift races. How have you found that? Have you found them a really great idea? And obviously it's incentive-wise, it's a great incentive. It's something to work for, like look forward to. It's a really great way of pushing. I know quite a few pro athletes have been involved in quite a few of the virtual racing. Did you enjoy the experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was completely new, and it was, you know, just a fun way to break up training for sure. Yeah. And I mean, it was painful. Like,
that's what everyone says. It was painful. Oh.
Yeah, I'm used to, you know, a 4 hour, you know, our races are so much longer. And so to have to go at that intensity for you know, for that short a time, or, you know, relatively short a time, it makes it feel quite long.
I can imagine. I was speaking to Josh Amberger not long ago, and of course he's a phenomenal bike rider, and we had one of the virtual races down here, which was the Kiwis versus the Aussies, and the Aussies got a good butt whipping that day. I think the Kiwis absolutely annihilated them, and it was Josh's first time doing one of those races, and he said it was a little bit of a shock to the system, that's for sure.
Yeah, the, you know, the first kind of real Zwift race that I did, the first 5 minutes, I'm just like, they're going to slow down, right? They're going to settle in. When does it slow down?
And they don't. Like, and oh, they no. Don't. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. And have you got any intention to do any more virtual racing, or are you going to just keep it under wraps now? Because it is, I will get your opinion on this in a sec. It is looking not likely, but there's a chance that there obviously will be some races towards the back end of this year of 2020. So is the idea now just to do maybe a running race or two, or I know that you took part in a time trial. Is that right? Or you did a time trial not too long ago?
It was the time trial was just me and my bike. It wasn't anything official.
Against
the
watch, no.
Yeah, I'd never done a 40K all-out effort, and so
that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we decided to give that a go, and yeah, I think, you know, I might jump in the Zwift series a couple more times. You know, primarily now, like you said, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I think that there's enough of a chance that I need to be ready for August or September racing, and so. Yeah, I'll jump in a few Zwift races or virtual races as the opportunities come up and they fit in training and things like that. But primarily, it's about time to shift focus to essentially this would be like a January for a September, a typical January timeline out from the first Ironman of the year, and so that's kind of where the training's got to start to shift. I took a break. About a 10-day break a few weeks ago, just to, you know, in hopes that we would get some fall racing. If we get fall racing, you know, we've got to be prepped to go from September 1 to February, mid-February, and so without a break. And so, you know, I definitely took advantage of some downtime, and then we'll see what happens.
Actually, speaking to most of the pro athletes, that's exactly what they've been doing, and just keeping the program like a build program. So a few specific sessions, but nothing to more just to get back, build a solid base. But that's interesting to hear you now to say that you are with Julie and obviously Matt, you are looking at doing some more specific race-paced sessions in the next month or so. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. I'll do probably one more the rest of this month as, you know, pure base, and then, you know, starting June 1, it's time to start race prep until we find out that, you know, one way or the other.
Otherwise, that's right. And so the plan is still to try and get, obviously, to get some races in. Sebi Kinley put a post up the other day where he actually wrote down the races that he is going to be doing this year, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean, obviously, he's in the same boat as everyone. Not every yep. race he has on there could fall by the wayside. But I think it's great that he said, no, I'm going to be positive. These are the races that I'm looking to be doing yep. this year and obviously next, and that's what I'm training for. And I think as a professional, I think you have to. You can't just throw yes. in the towel and say, well, stuff it, nothing's happening. I'm just going to cruise through 2020 and wait for 2021. I don't think that's the right attitude. So, you know, right. I think not that you necessarily have to announce it to the world, but I think it's important that you guys have some sort of a race plan. And there are races that are still there on the calendar. And as you said, until they're taken off, you have to assume that they're going to go ahead. And yep. I know there are quite a few races still down in the States. And that may be the case, I think, for most athletes. Maybe it will be just racing domestically for a little while now.
That's kind of, you know, I think if racing happens, it's going to be at least starting domestically. And I think we'll have, you know, I hope that we have a couple opportunities, and, you know, I really hope that by, you know, beginning of December, international is all open. So, I can get, you know, I was really bummed to have the Collins Cup not happen. And
yeah,
and
so I'm really, I know.
Really
Me too.
Hoping that, Daytona is able to go off without a hitch and to go and have a good showing there.
Well, from everything, I mean, we have meetings every week about the race in Daytona, and I know the PTO are working extremely hard. They've been phenomenal, and they yes. are as keen as beans to get that one off the ground, and I know that the Challenge Daytona team are exactly the same. So they are doing everything possible, and I really hope it goes off too, because I think it's going to yeah. be a really exciting concept. It's a good distance. It's a different distance. It's not quite half, so it's yep. not quite middle distance, just under, but I think it'll be a really exciting race, particularly if we can get all the top 40 athletes there from all around the world. Will be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I wanted to put you on the spot because I was only just talking about this the other night to some friends, and I didn't even think about it. Next year, 2021, with the announcement that Kona will be taking place in February and October, there is obviously a chance that if you – obviously, there are going to be athletes, pro athletes, that will need to qualify for February's race, and then they will need to qualify again or at least validate for October's. So there could be a circumstance where an athlete will be required to do 4 full distance races in under 12 months. Now, I know you said yes. in your first year you did 5, you're crazy. And I must admit, I used to do 4 to 5 was my norm as well. But, you know, things have come a long way since then, and I think 4 to 5 is definitely too many. So how do you think this is going to affect a lot of the pro athletes? Because many athletes, for example, the Jan Frodenos of the world, do a maximum of 2. There are a lot of athletes that are like that. And then obviously they add in a few middle distance races. But honestly, do you think this is going to be something that most athletes will try and achieve? Or will they just say, you know what, forget it, I won't do February, I'll just wait for October, or vice versa? Because 4 full distance races in less than 12 months, that's a pretty tough ask.
It is. There's a few guys who do that on a regular basis and do it quite well. Personally, I think that, you know, all my goals line up for Kona, and I don't think that I can chase them if I'm not there. And so I need to do whatever possible to get there. Obviously, the 16 or so men and women who have qualified already and or validated are sitting pretty.
Yes. Yep.
You know, so it's gonna. I think those individuals are in a really great spot already, and you know, I really think that, you know, if racing starts in August or September, it's going to be a dogfight that first month. I hope this isn't the case, but I anticipate, you know, some people will be dropping out of races, that they're in the money for, but not in the Kona slot for, to save themselves and go after another one. And, you know, that's, you know, unfortunately the way the system works is, you know, you've got to make business decisions sometimes, and it's a part of the things that I absolutely hate, but,
it's part of being a pro.
You got to be, you know, if your goals line up in Kona, you've got to be there in order to chase.
No, totally agree. So. And so what happens in this? I mean, obviously this is probably the furthest thing from a pro's mind, but I was just thinking about it, obviously, because it's just so new to us all. Who is technically crowned the 2021 world champion. Are we just going to have two? Is that just the way it's going to be?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's just a really weird concept.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you think about advertising and sponsors and you know, the amount of work they do with the Kona champions, and all of a sudden we're going to have four, two men and two women. So it's going to be an interesting time next year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, sure. I know it's, I mean, in the general scheme of things, it's probably like, who cares? We just want to get out there and race. And I think that's going to be the most important thing, on not just on the professional athlete's mind, but also on all of the amazing age group athletes around the world.
Sure.
And one thing that we've been talking about over this side of the world is, obviously, for the first time ever for Australians and New Zealanders, it's actually perfect timing for a world championship, because it's right through, smack through our summer. So we actually get to train, we can stay home, they can train at home. So it's going to be very, very interesting. I think it'll be a different, completely different concept for a lot of Aussies and a lot of Kiwis who often have to leave home and go elsewhere because it's just too cold to train through winter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
and the dynamics of the race are going to be, you know, quite different anyways. Just I think it won't be quite as hot and humid, but it'll probably be
warmer.
And so,
yeah, true, true.
You know, making the swim is going to be that much more important, because, you know, closing gaps on the bike is going to be pretty tough.
Tough to do. No, it's, I tell you, one thing we know for sure, Matt, is that 2021 is going to be an exceptionally exciting year as far as racing goes.
Yeah, one way or the other.
One way or the other, that's right. Now, I want to talk quickly about your Matt Hansen Racing. What brought that about? Obviously, you gave up work as a professor, you turned full-time pro. How long before you thought about the Matt Hansen Racing concept? I mean, it's an amateur. So it's age group team.
Primarily, yeah.
Yeah, primarily. And I'm sure you've got some amazing age groupers there that are probably on the cusp. Was that just something you thought of yourself? Did you sit down with your wife and think about it? Is there anyone else involved with Matt Hansen Racing, or is it purely just your team?
Yeah, no. I really met, you know, I love teaching. So when I left the classroom, this was kind of a way to fill that void.
Fill that gap.
Still, you know, have, you know, contact with people on a regular basis, aside from my wife and dogs, who I love all of them dearly, but,
of course,
you know, needed, you know, a bit more contact or a bit more human interaction, and to have it in a way that, you know, people can, or have shared interest or love of triathlon. And then, you know, just with, you know, I went to school for 8 years for this type of thing. And so to still be able to use my education is an added bonus as well. Makes my mom feel a little bit better, I guess.
So,
but yeah, no, the team actually has grown, quite significantly. It started with just myself, and, you know, I was coaching five or six athletes, and, and before COVID hit, I think we had 120 athletes and 12 coaches, and
wow.
And then, you know, we added just like a race team as well as the coaster athletes, that, you know, so the 120 was between the two. But it definitely grew to, you know, a little bit faster than I anticipated at first. And it's been a lot of fun. We've had five or six pros that I've worked with throughout the years. I think we've got two on the roster right now, and then just a, you know, age groupers ranging from people doing their first triathlon all the way up to you know, people looking for the overall win of the amateur division.
Well, yeah, that world championships. Yeah, that's amazing. So huge. And do you find it difficult to separate the two, between your own training and training of others? And I totally understand. I'm from a teaching background too. So, I mean, I love the fact that you're still teaching, and I totally get it. But is it sometimes difficult, you know, to separate the two, or you don't separate, you have them together as one? As you were saying, when you're on training camps, is it just about your athletes, and then you spend the time after the training camp to do your own training?
Yeah, for the most part, I think it's actually helped make it easier to separate, because I can use my thinking time to write yes, other people's yes, programs rather programs, than thinking yeah. about what matters what you're and we should doing, be doing yep. differently.
Yep.
And it's really just helped me to just buy into their, you know, their program even more and continue to learn from them. That, you know, they both have taught me a ton as well. And, you know, when I do training camps, you know, I typically time them to when I'm going to be doing an aerobic block anyways. And so, you know, just it's time on the bike and you know, so then that makes it a little bit, you know, more feasible to get, you know, just the work that I need to be getting in while also, you know, having a group with us. And that way I'm not, you know, the first time I tried to do it, it was, you know, it was at the wrong time and I was trying to have quality training and it put me in the ground because I was doing my sessions at like 4 or 5 in the morning and then, you know, and going out and riding with the team and coaching my dad and, you know, riding around while they're running. So I just, that didn't work. So that was a learn from a mistake situation.
Yeah. Which is we've all done. They're not bad as long as you do learn from it. But
yes,
look,
exactly.
You've said it a really interesting thing, and I think this is the downfall of so many professional athletes is you're dead right. I mean, once you go full-time, you do have a lot of time on your hands, and often it's that overthinking, particularly when you're an intelligent athlete as well. And I've seen a few athletes fall into this where they just overthink and overanalyze every session or every feeling that they have. But you're right. If you've got something else where you've got to spend time and energy, you don't have that time to get yourself into trouble. And I've seen athletes dig themselves into some pretty big holes because of it. So, yeah, no, it's good. It's really good. I mean, I mean, obviously I don't get to the States that often, but I know last year when I was in Daytona, it's always good to see lots of the Matt Hansen team out there racing. And
yeah,
seeing more and more.
Showing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's very good. Now, obviously this is for my own purpose. This is not for my listeners. I cannot let you go before talking about your puppy. Is it Rocky the Giant?
Rocky, yes.
Yeah, love it. So Rocky.
He was a
giant
present
black
to
snauzer.
Myself.
Oh,
yeah, he's a giant
schnauzer. Okay.
Yeah, he was a present to myself for winning Ironman Texas in 2017. Yeah, I told my wife
this.
I really wanted one. She said, "You win Texas this year, and I'll let you get one." And
that's awesome.
So I did, and then my present to myself in 2018 was sending him to puppy school and getting him trained.
Oh, that's hilarious! So how old's Rocky now?
He's 3 now. Yeah.
3 now. Okay. So you got him as a pup. And did the training, make a difference?
Oh gosh. Yeah. And you know, it was just, we hadn't figured him out yet. Like he's got so much energy and you know, like he'll go on an 8K run with me at,
love it.
You know, in a 30 minute 8K and
yeah, I was going to say your crazy pace.
We just didn't realize that he just needed to be dog tired before we could train him. And not supposed to be a pun, but we just weren't getting him tired enough. And so you know, he was frustrated with us. We were frustrated with him and, you know, we had somebody come and help us and a month later we have a much better, a lot more fun dog.
it's just funny you say that because I have 2 Cocker Spaniels. So, they're both the same age. One we got as a pup. We took her through puppy school. She's amazing. The other one we got at 8 months of age as a rescue, thought it was too late to train her. And she's a nightmare, an absolute living nightmare. I mean, I love her to pieces, but some days I just want to throttle her because she just hasn't had the training. And the difference between the two, people just automatically think she's still a puppy, even though they're both 6, you know. So I'm hearing you loud and clear. I know what you mean. And we've got to a point too now, if we don't run them every day, then it's chaos at night. So
tired dogs are happy dogs.
Happy dogs, that's right. Now, is it just the one dog? You've just got Rocky or you do have another dog?
We have a miniature schnauzer as well, we've had for almost 10, over 10 years now.
Oh, okay.
So she,
she's older. A lot older.
Yeah, she had her world rocked when Rocky.
I bet she did when Rocky turned up. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, but are they good friends now or
no?
Just
Rocky
no,
just
tolerate.
Wants to play so bad, and Zoe just wants
get
to be left alone. So she
get this crazy dog away from me.
she migrates to the closet and just chills out in the laundry basket until my wife gets home, and then she's pinned to Ashley's lap.
Ashley's lap. You know, honestly, this is reminding me just of my home here. Often I get the look from Mackie, my oldest, and she just looks at me and says, "Why, Mum? Why did you do this to me?" It's like, I'm sorry. So I started following Rocky the other day on Instagram.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Laura told me about it, and she said, "Oh, you should start following Rocky. You'll love it. He's beautiful, and what a gorgeous looking dog." But the funniest thing Laura said was, Rocky's actually, he's got more followers than I do. So, and I looked, I'm like, oh, he's almost got 10,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like I started that account just to, just mess around with a few different things that I've heard people say that works. And, it was kind of a way to practice without ruining my own account. And, it's been a fun little project that now my wife took it over. So,
oh, that's good. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's unreal. So, I've been a fur mummy now for 7 years, so I totally relate. My friends all think I'm crazy, but it can't be helped, you know.
Yeah.
Dogs are awesome.
They make life better, for sure.
They absolutely do. That's right. Now, plans moving forward, and I promise I'll let you go fairly soon. I could talk to you for ages. I'm terrible. Where do you go to from here, Matt? I look at your stats and obviously you know these, but just for our audience, quick facts, 10 pro wins, 3 North American Ironman Championship wins, a 7:39 full distance time, a 2:34 fastest marathon time. I mean, these are crazy stats for someone that, you know, at the end of the day, you're still relatively new to the sport. You know, you haven't gone through the same amount of years that most have been through. I remember when I was looking them up just thinking, where does this guy go from here? So obviously more wins is something that you want, but I know from talking to you now for the past hour, it's not just about the wins, obviously, it's about the process. So obviously you are wanting to go faster. Realistically, have you got any thoughts in your head about the fastest sort of marathon time or a goal? And I know at the end of the day, that's not everyone's sole purpose, but what do you think is possible?
That's a good question. Honestly, I've not really thought about trying to run faster than I did when I went 2:34. That just kind of happened. Leading into that day, I thought at best I could go 2:38, but someone just decided
that's
to,
a huge difference. Yeah, an extra 4 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, someone decided to attach themselves to my hip for most of the race, and I just couldn't get rid of them. Sometimes that's what it takes to find out what's really possible. You know, I definitely wouldn't have done that, just running off by myself. And really, the goal leading into every race is just to have the same mindset that I did leading into that race, be able to follow the process of, you stick to the plan until, it's time not to. And, that race was crazy. It was just a day I'll never forget for sure. But, Julie was there and the entire time she's like, okay, first lap, she's like, okay, it's time to settle in, slow down. By the third lap, she's like, well, I hope you know what the hell you're doing.
But you're right, and it's an interesting thing you've just brought up here, because I've had so many arguments, discussions, sorry. You know, it is about sticking to the plan, particularly over a long distance race, because, you burn your bickies too early, then it's all over. Like you said, when you faint, when you passed out in one of your races towards the end because you just went too hard. But yep. when you are in a situation like you've just said in Ironman Texas, where you had another athlete at your hip who you are thinking, surely any second now I'm going to blow this person away, and you don't, when do you decide, okay, well, you know what, sticking to the plan right now is not going to work. It is not going to give me the win. I need to do something extraordinary, and I need to get out of my comfort zone to get rid of this athlete.
Yeah.
That's racing, but how do you know when to make that decision? I mean, you make it too early, you blow yourself to pieces. So it's a tough call.
Yeah, that race, the plan was, you know, if I got off the bike where I did, which is basically, you know, obviously Andrew Starkiewicz was there and he was quite a bit in front of us. But I was in the main group. And, you know, so it was to get to the front as soon as possible and build a lead, then protect it. That was kind of the plan for the run.
Control the race.
And that's how I'm comfortable racing. And so that was what I set out to do. And so I set out running hard. Just thought that I would, you know, was running fast enough that I would, when I passed people, they wouldn't think
wouldn't
twice
be able to go with you. No. Yeah, that would be crazy. Suicide.
That didn't happen. And so I just had to keep running hard and obviously the year before I had passed out on the, same course. And so, I've been on both ends, but, you know, thankfully I was able to hold on, at the end and, come out with a good result.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think these are the races, though, that really change not just your own mindset of what's possible, but every other athlete. I know when, for example, when Chrissy Wellington first came on the scene and started doing times and doing things in races that we just thought would have thought was just suicidal stupidity. And then she showed that actually, no, this is what wins your races. And it's the evolution of the sport, and I think it helps all pro athletes lift their game and realize that they're only putting limitations on themselves that they shouldn't be. So we need athletes like you, because this is how the sport develops. This is how each and every year it gets better and better and faster and faster. And I, sitting back on the other side now, I love nothing more than seeing these breakthrough performances and seeing races where athletes are going head-to-head over, you know, just under 8 hours worth. It's crazy to think, but this is where we get the progression in our sport. So we need you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it definitely, the amount of people that have run under 240 in the last couple of years has really started to increase. And, you know, a few years ago, that was, you know, not heard of. And
Not at all.
So, you know, the races are definitely, you know, the swimming is getting faster. The biking, you know, cycling is catching up to kind of time trialing in terms of drag. And, you know, the sport is changing so much. And, I'm just hoping I can stay competitive for, you know, number of more years. I think I've got a few more good ones in me.
I'm pretty sure you do. What's your age now, if you don't mind asking? Are you 35, mid 30s?
35, yep.
Just 35. You're right in the prime.
Yes.
For long distance racing. Wow, you've got at least another top, at the top of the game, at least another 5 years. I mean, the way it's going these days.
That's the hope.
Yep, absolutely.
Sure.
Just got to stay healthy and injury free and you're
there.
And
it's got to stay fun. And it's got to stay fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
When people ask me when you know it's time to go, it's when the process isn't fun, it's time to walk away. And right now,
everybody
has bad days, but when the good days outnumber the bad, you're doing something right.
You know, I totally agree with you, Matt. It's an interesting, and everyone has a different perspective on when it's time to end. But I knew for myself, I was still loving the process. So I still loved the training, the sessions. I could still hurt myself in sessions. But when I got to races, I would love the swim. The gun goes off. I'd love the swim. I'd love the bike, get to the run. And I was just so willing to settle, and I'd had enough, and I wasn't enjoying it anymore. So I knew the time was close. So it's exactly what you said. If the fun is not there or the enjoyment's not there anymore, then you know it's getting close to time. But you are a long, long way from that, my friend. So I don't think you need to worry about that for now. Well, listen, Maddie, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've learned so much, so many amazing things about you today. So it makes me really happy. As I said, first time ever interviewing someone that I've never met, and now I am itching to meet you. So I really hope I get to see you.
Yes, well, let's hope December.
Yeah, absolutely, in Daytona. That would make my day, absolutely make my day. But thanks so much, and I hope you have a really great night. And
thank you. You have a good morning.
Thank you. Thanks, darling. Thanks. See you later.
All right.
Bye.
Yep, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.